Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:03 p.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 5th. Wall Street is shut today for the funeral of former President Bush, but everywhere else was open. And if we look at the futures markets, Wall Street is in mildly positive territory, but what I think was perhaps more, telling of the kind of environment we're in is that the vast majority of other markets were not down in the same kind of dynamic manner that we saw on Wall Street yesterday. So part of the reason for that is because the Chinese administration came out and said that they are reasonably positive about the outcome of the talks, but they have been pretty sketchy on what the details of the discussions had been. So at the very minimum, there is a hiatus. And what we also learned from the Trump administration yesterday was that the 3 months begins on January 1st. So effectively, it's 4 months of a hiatus. Well, there's plenty of time to talk between now and the end of March. But perhaps the more important point is that China has expressed at least some willingness to discuss issues. I think something that people haven't really given due consideration to is that China has definitely been engaged in one of the most epic corporate espionage programs that the world has ever seen. But they have been doing that because they feel like they're at a technological disadvantage, and they've been ploughing money into R&D. Well, generally speaking, if we go back and look at history, it has been something that just about all emerging economies have done, has been to engage in some form of corporate espionage, and they generally don't decide to uphold intellectual property rights until they feel like that they've got some form of competitive advantage. Well, the very fact that China is unwilling to uphold intellectual property probably suggests that they don't feel that they have reached that Rubicon just yet. Quite whether that is good news or bad news for the global economy, I don't think has been really discussed at all. Now, when we look at the Chinese markets, they've been trending down in a pretty consistent manner since January. And the 2800 point level represents the lower side of the overhead trading range. It needs to at least push above that level, but more particularly to push above the 2900 point level to trigger a midpoint danger line stop in order to demonstrate that we are back in a demand dominated environment. And it certainly is steadying, and it's been pausing over the course of the last 6 weeks, but it needs to do more than that. What is heartening is that we had the upside key reversal in on the 19th of October. We had upside follow through, and that low has not been taken out yet. Then when we look at the Shenzhen B shares, well, the most important factor about the index is that it does not include banks. But the banks have been among the better performers over the course of the last 3 or 4 months because they are the subject of clear support from the central government. But even here, we're starting to see evidence of at least a pause. And this is at least some support building, and it raises the potential that we're going to get a reversion back up towards the mean. Of course, then it will have to put in higher reaction lows. It will have to sustain a move above the trend mean, and then it will have to continue to put in one little range above another. So we're still in very, very early days if this is a recovery scenario for Chinese assets. And that question is, I think, an awfully big one. What we certainly have here is evidence in the banking sector that they're supporting it, and as long as that sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact, we can give the benefit of the doubt to higher to lateral ranging. But the bigger problem, of course, is that the real issues with Chinese credit are in the unlisted sector, so there's no real easy way to monitor that sector from by looking at the listed banks, because they've already increased the number of significantly important financial institutions to pretty much incorporate the listed sector. Now, when we look at what's going on the H-share market in Hong Kong, well, it was in negative territory today, but it closed off the lows. Well, it has pulled back from this 11,000 level, and 11,000 has been an area of resistance since at least July. So therefore, it needs to at least sustain a move above that area. which now corresponds with the region of the trend mean, in order to really confirm that this is more than short-term steadying. So we're at a rather important Rubicon here for a number of these Chinese assets, and they've been trending down all year. Well, when we look at the some of the Wall Street indices, then the Russell 2000 is right in the region of the lower side of its range. Most particularly, it did not really rally to any real measurable extent after we saw the low in October. And now it's coming back down towards the lower side of that range. So it's continuing to exhibit relative weakness. And that's certainly been the case now since the peak back in towards the end of October. Well, this is an interest rate sensitive sector, and technology is also an interest rate sensitive sector. And we had a very large pullback from the region of the trend mean by the NASDAQ yesterday, and that has confirmed resistance in the region of the progression of lower rally highs evident since the beginning of October. Well, this isn't a particularly difficult chart to analyze, because it needs to break that sequence of lower rally highs to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And until it does that, well, then we have to conclude that we're in a supply-dominated environment when you have a progression of lower rally highs and lower lows. But I think the issue with looking at the stock market is to conclude that we do have bubbly characteristics, but that's not really the case in the vast majority of cases for the stock market, where the real bubbly activity is in the credit markets, where covenant loans have issuance has been surging higher for years, where leverage loans have been really all the rage. And then we're also starting to see not only the high yield sector doing worse, and the high yield spread breaking out, but also when we think about the investment grade sector, well, that hasn't been doing particularly well either. And when we look at the performance of some of these ETFs, well, it's been a phenomenally rangy environment since about 2012. So a six-year range after a very impressive advance, well, that potentially is a type 3 top formation. If we start to think about ranging time and size, well, it's a big range. It's been going on for 6 years already. And then when that fulfills our characteristics. You've got the ranging, you've got the time, and you've got the size. So then 110 is an awfully big psychological level. But what is particularly interesting is that despite the fact that we've had what has been a pretty impressive rebound on U.S. 10-year treasuries, we have not seen the same kind of move in the investment-grade sector. Well, the real problem here is that there are a substantial number of companies today that are listed as investment grade, and they probably shouldn't be. And the thinning process, or the winnowing process, is probably going to take some time, and that is putting downward pressure on these investment grade bonds. Well, we probably aren't going to get a yield. No, definitely not going to get a yield on an ETF. But the long and the short of it is that yields are rising, and that's likely to, the very fact that you have yields contracting on the 10-year and yields rising on the corporate bond sector suggests that the spread is widening here. Well, the 10-year Treasury yield is right in the region of the trend mean. So this is a natural area where we may anticipate some resistance coming back in, but there hasn't been any evidence of it just yet. Oil prices in here today were a little bit steadier in early trading, but gave up the advance. And part of the reason for that is because we do have an agreement from OPEC and Russia, but they've been pretty scant on the details of what that agreement is, and that hasn't been the kind of catalytic event that would send prices higher, because we just don't have the detail. Then when we look at the gold market, well, gold prices were reasonably unchanged in here today, but they're right in the region of the upper side of this just about 7 week range. Well, certainly gold prices have been putting in some support around this $1,200 level, and they've held the sequence of higher reaction lows and unwound the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. But now the big question is, what's next? It's going to have to break on the upside. It's going to have to sustain a move above the trend mean to really confirm a return to demand dominance. I continue to think that the most important thing that's happened in gold in the last 5 or 6 years has been the big move that we had in early 2016. That was a type 2 massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend. And I think if gold prices do sustain a move above the trend mean, well, we can conclude that this is a very lengthy period of right-hand extension. So it's certainly worth keeping an eye on in terms of the fact that gold has been doing nothing at all for nearly 3 full years. And it's when we think about the fact that there are a lot of asset classes and sectors and instruments that are at close to record highs, even though we've seen prices coming back by approximately 10 or 11% on the stock market indices, that's still off of a record high. Whereas gold, having peaked back in 2011, had a multi-year decline, and we're really not so far away from that the nadir of that decline. So there is the potential for relative performance by the precious metal sector. And palladium prices have been leading on the upside, and they briefly hit a new all-time high in here today, but we're not quite able to hold on to it. Now, if we go and look at what's going on in Europe, France has been all over the headlines because of the yellow jacket. I don't think it's called yellow jacket, but I think everyone knows what I'm talking about. It's been people protesting about the fuel tax hike that the Macron government has been forced to walk back from. Well, I think one of the more important points is that we have a particularly inconsistent uptrend when we look at the CAC 40 in France, but it increasingly has completing type 3 top formation characteristics. And it was down in a reasonably dynamic manner in here this week. If we zoom in and just look at that on the downside, well, or sorry, on a daily basis, well, 4,900 represents the lower side of this 6 week range, and it really would need a very clear upper dynamic to question potential that it isn't going to break downwards. Well, when we look at the number of economies that had negative growth last quarter, then the market is potentially pricing in the potential that while economists think, for example, that the German economy is going to return to growth in this quarter, that's not what the stock market is saying. And the DAX was down again in here today. Well, it wasn't down the 3% that Wall Street was down yesterday, but it did finish close to the low of the day. Well, when we look at, for example, the Swiss market, then that has held up comparatively better, but it was also in negative territory in here today, and it's been largely ranging now for nearly 4 years. But it really does need to push up and away from this range. That there is a, well, I guess we'd give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic, and the most recent dynamic has been downwards, that it's confirming at least near-term resistance in the region of this 9,200 point level. So I think the more of these European indices that we scroll through and look at, well, each of them looks like it is under really quite severe pressure and has experienced significant trend deterioration. That's equally true of Northern Europe as it is of Southern Europe, and that's not a bullish phenomenon. Well, against the background where the ECB is starting to end its quantitative easing program, the stock market is sending a very clear signal that Europe's not ready for that. Then when we look at the 10-year Bund, Well, the yield is right down at the lower side of its range, and it had steadied, or at least the bond yields had paused a little bit at this level, but it's at a quarter of 1%, or at least not very far away from that level. This is the lower side of the range, so we may see some steadying, but there is a lot of demand here for safe haven assets against a background where the fabric of society in a substantial number of European countries is deteriorating. Social democracy was basically backed up by continued expansion of government debt to fund social programs. And then manufacturing or domestic manufacturing was sacrificed on the altar of globalization, so that that essentially over time robbed the economy of the ability to provide the kinds of better paying jobs that are the foundation of the tax structure. So a lot of the cracks have been papered over by debt. Countries like France have got a debt to GDP ratio of 99%. So when they're already the most taxed economy in the world, among the developed countries at least, well, how on earth are they going to get more money out, or are they going to squeeze more money out of the economy without causing a recession or deflation or a substantial cut to social programs? Well, if people are out in force vandalizing the Arc de Triomphe and setting cars alight in Paris for a fuel tax hike, what are they going to do if they're asked to work longer, pay towards the health system, or for additional taxes to pay for the education system? This it doesn't look like a particularly fortuitous set of circumstances. These are the kinds of conditions that create revolution. And usually there's two things you need as a causal factor for revolution. One is lots of young people. Well, France doesn't have that, and the young people it does have are from North African minorities. Then it's food. Generally speaking, it's when food prices accelerate higher. That's when people really feel that they have to get out and truly protest in a revolutionary manner. Well, we've seen something to that effect in terms of transportation fuel, because getting around is something that everybody needs to do. It's as much a basic need for society as food and clothing. But obviously, the administration doesn't really appreciate that. Well, what that almost certainly means is that they are going to go the other way, and they're going to introduce wealth taxes. So it's going to be an increasingly difficult environment for wealthier people in France, who generally tend to be more entrepreneurial, and the chances are that they're going to leave, and that's going to further rob the country of an additional source of revenue. So this is, I think, a very dangerous environment that has evolved in France, and the stock markets tell us that Europe is definitely not the place to be. Well, if we simply just look at a broad European stock market index, it's got clear type 3 top formation completion characteristics, and I don't think we really need to say a great deal more than that. Well, the fact that oil prices have steadied is something that is likely to weigh on the Indian market, considering that there's almost an inverse correlation between the two. But I think perhaps a more important point is that the rupee has paused in terms of its appreciation. It's right in the region of the trend mean, so this is a natural area where I think we can anticipate that we're going to get at least some pause and consolidation, and that's likely to, I think, take some of the impetus out of the rally that we've seen on the stock market. And the Bombay Banks Index is also looking like it's going to pause here and potentially unwind some of its short-term overbought condition. Now, when we look at the rest of Asia, then Indonesia, for example, was in negative territory but off its low, and it's continuing to sustain this move back above the trend mean. Then when we look at the Thai market, it's bouncing from that 1600 level. The Filipino market is also at steadying here from this 7,000 level, and it has so far held this move back above the trend mean. Well, these are among the markets that have got some of the better demographics, that if the trade war with China persists, they're likely to benefit from reshoring or a movement of industry out of China and into other countries. Vietnam is probably one of the better beneficiaries, and it is, I think, more well placed than a number of other countries. And the index there has at least been steadying over the course of the last 6 months. But the other point, of course, is that the renminbi has been a little bit steadier, although it was in negative territory in here today. And just any steadying at all in terms of the renminbi takes some of the pressure off of countries that compete with China on a productivity basis. So if the renminbi does get any stronger, then that's likely to be a tailwind for just about all other emerging markets. Well, when we look at Brazil, the Brazilian market was in positive territory in here today. What we're certainly seeing is that when people are looking at the world today, they are getting a little bit antsy about the higher valuations that we see in other markets, and they're looking at places that have already had the big declines. Well, the devaluations in a number of the Latin American currencies have been very significant. It's the exact same thing with Turkey, and these represent potential, I think, potential from the perspective of an international investor, both from an outperformance and absolute performance perspective, particularly when there are questions being asked about some of the leading sectors, and I hesitate to use leading, but the better performing sectors in Wall Street or indeed in Europe. So that's likely to, I think, to act as a tailwind for some of the emerging markets as well. Well, the Mexican peso continues to pause here, but it doesn't really look like anything other than a pause, and the most likely scenario is that it is going to trend higher from here. Well, Mexico is not quite like Brazil. Brazil has adopted a right-wing populist. Mexico has adopted a left-wing populist, and the stock market tells us which one the investment community prefers. Well, the Mexican market bounced from that 40,000 level, and there is certainly a short-term oversold condition, but there's been a distinct absence of follow-through on the upside. Now, the Australians left interest rates on hold in here today, and the Aussie dollar has paused in the region of the trend mean. Well, Australia probably is not at a position where it can raise interest rates, particularly when the housing market looks like it's under pressure here. Then it's a pretty similar situation for Canada, and the Canadian dollar has been trending lower against the US dollar, particularly since the latter piece of 2017. Well, Canada also has extraordinarily high home prices, and that's been driven by extraordinarily low interest rates. It rather inhibits their ability to continue to raise them. Well, Toll Brothers has came out overnight and was making the point that people have been talking down the market, and they're trying to say that things are starting to look up and that this is a temporary phenomenon, but the share price has just about halved, not quite, but almost halved this year. It has paused over the course of the last 6 or 7 weeks, and that is allowing that oversold condition to unwind. But it really needs to sustain a move back above the trend mean to really suggest that the market is giving some credence to management's more bullish attitude. Then, when we look at, for example, Persimmon in the UK, well, we're presented with a relatively similar chart, although it hasn't pulled back by nearly the same extent and it's been falling less time. Well, there is certainly a short-term oversold condition, so there's potential for a bounce in here, but It has got a lot of work to do if this is going to represent a clear change to the supply-dominated environment. Well, the debate about exactly what's going to happen in terms of Brexit continues to rattle along. Well, the pound is right at the lower side of its range, and it was somewhat steadier in here today. The potential options that are available are becoming increasingly polarized. It's likely that there's either going to be a hard in or a hard out. And I think that the more likely scenario is that there is going to be another referendum. And that is going to prove even more, probably even more divisive than the last. The UK has got some significant internal strife in a different but not dissimilar manner to what's going on in France. This is all symptomatic of the breakdown in the social contract that people had signed up for a higher standard of living and gave up relatively high-paying manufacturing jobs in return for social benefits. And the social benefits have been deteriorating, debt has increased, and the jobs that are available don't pay nearly as well as they used to. Particularly on a purchasing power basis, and this is a significant challenge for just about all countries, and it's not something that is going to get better anytime soon. It's going to require some very imaginative policies. That is why we've had fiscal stimulus adopted in the USA and fiscal stimulus adopted in the UK. It's why Italy is looking to adopt a fiscal stimulus program and is being stymied in those efforts by the EU. But it's only a matter of time before other countries get this fiscal stimulus religion, because it's the only thing that's going to hold fa the fabric of society together. Well, on that note, I think I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.